fundamentally an American.
No more!
Wrong war!
No more!
Wrong war!
No more!
Wrong war!
No more!
Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war.
My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer, and our guest tonight is Bruce Merkin, Director of Communications for the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org. First, I want to thank all you great Pacifica members out there who pledged to the 420 Drug War News and the Cultural Baggage Show. And I want to thank you listeners to those and other shows who pledged your bucks to get your George Bush voodoo doll. We brought in the prototypes and the earlier renditions, and they should be mailed by next week. I actually heard that the Ronald Reagan voodoo doll wound up at the Smithsonian and was in fact the curator's favorite object of Americana. We have new ones with Saddam Hussein, Tony Blair, and this drug warrior, kind of a grim reaper type. And you can see them at our website, unvarnishedtruth.org. Now for a quick look at some hot news. Following quickly on the scientific fiasco at Johns Hopkins last month comes this story from today's New York Times. Fetal brains suffer badly from effects of alcohol. And they say searchers have determined that babies are more likely to be affected if mothers drink in a binge pattern, like five drinks one day rather than a single drink daily. But they went on further to say alcohol affects so many sites in the brain, researchers have come to believe that alcohol is far worse for the developing fetus than any other abused drug. Dr. Jacobson's study included cocaine users who used varying quantities of alcohol. Here's a quote from Jacobson. We found more serious cognitive impairment in relation to alcohol than cocaine or other drugs. The damage done to fetuses has often been wrongly connected to cocaine, many experts say. This is another quote from Jacobson. The consensus, I think, at this point is that most of the adverse effects that had been reported due to cocaine and crack use were from alcohol use. So once again, bad science is responsible for more harms than the use of the drugs themselves. The most deadly and detrimental drug of them all, alcohol. Alcohol is sold on every street corner, 7-Eleven, and we demonize and destroy the lives of those who would use a lesser drug. And of course, with demonization comes death, disease, and destruction that strolls hand in hand with drug prohibition. To wit, the recent conviction of a mother in South Carolina and another in Hawaii for having used cocaine and meth while pregnant, and the subsequent stillbirths they suffered. Hypocrisy is spelled D-E-A. Now, real quick, before I bring in Bruce Merkin, I want to introduce him with a piece I nabbed from this week's New York Times, and it's from a gentleman who calls himself EDO Large, and quote, keeping cannabis from the needy is a bad thing. Keeping opiates from the needy is a bad thing. Keeping mushrooms from those wanting to heal from the inside is a bad thing. Eradicating a way of life to keep a leaf from the lips of Indians because crazy Norte Americanos turn it into a powder de Diablo is a bad thing. There is a war against good things going on out there. Cannabis is one of those things. There are others, and they are important also. The war creates a culture of the lie, and that's no way to run a civilization. Let's go ahead and bring in Bruce. Are you out there, Mr. Merkin?
Good to be here.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I appreciate you joining us here on Cultural Baggage.
Yeah, I should warn you, I'm getting over a cold, so if I have a coughing fit periodically, please bear with me.
I understand, Bruce. I'm kind of coming down with it myself.
Uh-oh, you didn't catch it from me.
Well, no, I hadn't seen you in many a month. Bruce, if you would, tell the listeners out there about your organization and what you do for them.
Sure. The Marijuana Policy Project is headquartered in Washington, D.C., and we are the largest national organization working on changing our insane marijuana laws. We have somewhere over 13,000 members nationally and a staff of about 17 right now, and we work on federal and state legislation. And work with some local folks, too, all over the country. We do a lot of work on medical marijuana issues and also the general effort to end the war on marijuana users conducted by our government. And bit by bit, we make progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm director of communications. I'm the guy who mostly talks to the press and tries to educate the sometimes uneducable mainstream media.
Indeed, it is a tough chore sometimes, isn't it? Bruce, I want to bring forward a recording I did today. As president of Houston Normal, I get these calls from students doing papers, etc., and then I get these terrible calls of terrible situations, and let's just listen to it, and I want you to address this. Tell me what the hell is going on out there.
Actually, it's just outside of Beaumont, a small town called Vider. My name's Curtis. A friend of mine named Robert Bruce is in a lot of trouble. And at this moment, he is a high school senior, but he spent the last 2 months in rehab. He's a good kid, Robert. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't drink. And his mom walked in on him like the second or third time he tried marijuana. And she decided to call the cops and have him sent to rehab for 2 months. 2 months later, Robert shows back at the home, and Robert was so medicated and drugged up from rehab that he did not even recognize his own friends. The next day, he ran away from home. The cops picked him up, and he was just so disoriented and out of it from the medication they'd been giving him that I think he tried to run away, and he ended up getting into a scuffle with the police officer and attacked him. And he went to jail for a day or two, and now he's in a mental institution.
Curtis, this happens every day. Do you have other friends? Have you seen this happen before?
Yeah, I've seen similar instances of this all throughout high school and stuff, but this is just the most shocking because Robert was such a good kid.
Bruce, your comments on that?
It's hard to even know where to start. I think what you know and what your audience knows is that this is the daily grind of the so-called war on drugs. Jail or forced treatment is not the way to deal with people, particularly young people who are experimenting, for Christ's sake. I mean, you know, kids will sometimes do things that maybe we would rather they not do, but so often what we do to them in the name of the law is so many times worse. And, you know, I'm reminded as I hear that of one of the things that the drug czar, John Walters, likes to say as proof of the danger of marijuana is that 60% of teens who are in drug treatment are in treatment for marijuana. Well, the government's own figures show that those kids are in treatment because they were arrested. They were forced into treatment under the threat of jail. So we arrest kids for smoking marijuana, force them into treatment, use the treatment admissions thus produced as proof of what a dangerously addictive drug this is, and we create a sort of self-feeding feedback loop. It's just bizarre. But in the real world, people are being hurt by these laws a lot more than they're being helped.
Well, it reminds me just a bit of that movie, The Cuckoo's Nest. You know, Jack Nicholson's character went in trying to be slick and crazy and came out with a lobotomy. And that, you know, that's maybe an extreme example, but that kid smoked a little pot, wound up, if you will, a drug addict from the treatment and disoriented and lost his place in society totally now.
Well, you know, it's hard to know, of course, from a little bit of one story, but certainly what does happen fairly frequently is that kids get forced into treatment for having been caught smoking pot with their friends, and are put into a situation where they are told that they are drug abusers, and they start to identify that way. And that really can lead young people into much more destructive things.
Well, I hear often that in these treatment centers, they mingle the marijuana with the cocaine abusers, and they share secrets and contacts. And
exactly. I have no trouble saying I would rather high school kids not smoke pot. I would certainly rather they not do cocaine or speed or heroin. But for God's sake, what we're doing just doesn't make any sense. And you know, gradually the rest of the world is starting to move in another direction. We've had country after country now beginning the process of rethinking their marijuana laws. Not necessarily all the way there yet, but the Parliament in Great Britain just voted last week to reclassify marijuana under their national drug laws into the least serious category, where in most cases you won't be arrested. It's not perfect, but it's a big step forward. Belgium did the same thing earlier in the year. Luxembourg a couple of years ago. Portugal, one after another, they're doing it. And the U.S. is still stuck in the 1930s.
Indeed we are. I saw some of the articles in last week's Guardian newspaper. There was one by a member of the Parliament, Paul Flynn, in this Reefer Madness. And I think this was written just before the vote was taken. But they at least have, they lend themselves to discussion. They allow themselves to wonder if there isn't a better way. Whereas here, it's in the U.S., it's like it's locked from public view. They won't allow anybody to look in that Ark of the Covenant.
Well, yeah, you know, an official from the British Home Office was quoted in another Guardian story talking about why this change in treating marijuana as it should be treated, which is as a less dangerous drug than things like speed and cocaine, helps to educate young people. She said, this is a woman named Carolyn Flint, she said, quote, they can see for themselves the different effects of drugs, and therefore, if we are not having an honest discussion, they will not listen. You know, it's real basic, but we can't seem to manage to do that in the U.S.
Right. I often hear John Walters in his speeches and that new one, Barthwell, the deputy director, say that there are no legitimate medical associations that support medical marijuana. And, of course, that's just hogwash, isn't it?
Well, exactly. That is a bald-faced lie. And what is amazing to me at times, although I probably shouldn't be shocked anymore, is how blatant these people are. You know, the Institute of Medicine report commissioned by Walter's predecessor very clearly said that there are certain patients with certain illnesses, including situations like nausea and appetite loss, who can benefit from marijuana. Just a few months ago, a very well-regarded British journal, The Lancet Neurology, stated that marijuana's active components relieve pain in every experimental test that scientists have devised, and in fact said that marijuana could well be the aspirin of the 21st century. And yet, people like John Walters and his assistant Andrea Barthwell, or Cruella De Vil, as I sometimes refer to her, just absolutely flat-out lie. And what frustrates me often is that too often they are allowed in the mainstream press to get away with it.
Right, and I'm hoping to join you in presenting better communication skills through the Drug Sense organization to bring more people from reform on the air. Instead of having a drug czar debate a former drug czar, let's bring in somebody from the other side. You know, I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah, and I will say it does happen from time to time. My boss, our executive director, Rob Campia, was on the News Hour on PBS 2 weeks ago.
Oh, he kicked
Dr.
ass. He was great. He was great.
But, you know, John Walters won't debate us. You know, he may send one of his lieutenants, but he'll flat out refuse to debate any of us.
I was at a drug conference here at Rice University, Baker Institute, a year and a half ago. And Hutchinson was then the administrator of the DEA. And he debated Kevin Zeese, and Kevin kept asking, show us one instance where we have, stopped the supply side of cocaine coming out of the Central and South America. And Hutchinson would tap dance away from the question, tap dance away. And then finally he looked at his watch, oh, I have a plane to catch. And he got out of there. He could not answer it, of course.
Well, you know, I will give Mr. Hutchinson credit for the fact that he did at least do some of those things, like debating with Kevin. Although a little while before that, I accompanied a couple of medical marijuana patients to a public event that he was at, where they had a public forum and questions and answers. And one of the patients asked him, "Sir, do you believe I should go to jail for using my medicine?" And he absolutely would not give a straight answer.
Right. His conscience wouldn't even allow him, I suppose.
Well, you know, he didn't, I think, want to confront the fact that his policy, as much as he may not like to admit it, mean that people with cancer and MS and glaucoma and AIDS who find that marijuana relieves some of their symptoms face jail. And that's real. We hear from people like that all the time. And, you know, we're not a legal services organization. There often is not much that we can do to assist folks like that. But the stories you hear are just heartbreaking.
The people at WHAM out there in Santa Cruz, that just breaks my heart. That those people are so easily verifiable, legitimate medical marijuana patients, and the DEA came in and stole their plants just before harvest. It was atrocious.
Well, indeed it was, although I will say that the pace of these DEA raids in California does seem to have slowed down in the last year. And I think, frankly, it's because every time they've done one of these things, like the Wham raid, they got so much bad press that somebody in the White House is starting to figure that it's hurting their image.
You know, Bruce, I think we're going to take just a little break.
Marijuana may not cause the overdose deaths like heroin, but it's just as dangerous.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Chest pain, dizziness or lightheadedness, fever or chills, white curd-like patches in the throat, trouble breathing or wheezing, unusual swelling, unusual weakness, vision problems, vomiting. Time's up. The answer, another FDA-approved product, Advair, to prevent asthma attacks.
I want to commend you guys on the work you do, your involvement in the various state initiatives, the awakening of the American public to this desperate, if you will, situation that just so needs correcting now. And I try to tell folks here on the radio show that, you know, it's going to take them standing up. I mean, I can stand up, you can stand up, we've got a few thousand, tens of thousands. We need a million or two. We need people to realize that this drug war is over the day they decide to stand up. And my concern, it really boils down to, you know, I was talking earlier about the alcohol syndrome really being the culprit for those crack babies, if you will. The Johns Hopkins using methamphetamine instead of MDMA. And now this Houston toxicology lab where the director, the supervisor of the 15 people on the staff, doesn't even know how to work the machines that do the drug testing. So how many thousand people have gone to prison because of their inept, you know, work proficiency? And I just want to get your take on that whole observation.
But, you know, it's a very worrisome thing, and I'm not familiar with the details of the Houston situation, but I do know that we have an increasing push by the federal government for drug testing in various forms. We had the drug czar a couple of weeks ago in Boston advocating drug testing of our high school students. Well, you know, A, there are false positive tests, so kids will be stigmatized by that. B, what you do, particularly in a situation like that with young people, when you have a drug like marijuana that lingers detectably for much longer than many of the more dangerous drugs, like cocaine, like alcohol, you give people an incentive to use the more dangerous stuff because they're less likely to come up positive on a test. It's crazy. But, you know, Americans, we are very deferential to science, and we respect numbers and statistics and things, and we like neat quantifiable answers. But those things can be manipulated, and we've seen some examples of that. And it requires people, I think, to be a lot more skeptical and cautious than we sometimes are. And I would just, if I can go back to what you said before about people getting involved, it's so important. It really does matter when elected officials hear from members of the public. And it doesn't take a whole lot of work. I know an MPP on our website, which is mpp.org, you can sign up and get email alerts, and we have a setup where you can basically very easily fax a letter to your member of Congress or to your state legislator. And other organizations I know do similar things. Sign up for those. Start with the easy stuff, but pay attention and get involved. It does make a difference.
Indeed, Bruce. That same letter, you know, copy it, mail it to your local newspaper editor, you know, send it to the local mayor, your governor. All these people need to hear from you, and that one letter can suffice, and it can email to a whole lot of people if that's how you choose to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, the point about letters to the editor is really significant. It is, in every survey, it always comes up as one of the most read sections of every newspaper. Write letters.
You bet. I want to take a look at Canada, if you will. I understand that the law up there was declared null and void, and then they kind of rebuilt it and tried to reconstitute it, and now they're saying, well, it's probably null and void again, and they're having trouble writing a new law. And But again, the main thing is up there, the government is now actually growing marijuana and giving or selling it, I think it is, to the medical patients. They must have done some scientific observations. They must have evaluated and determined that, you know, it's not going to kill anybody. Hasn't killed anybody yet. Am I right?
Well, you are right. And, you know, Canada, the situation politically is a bit of a muddle. There is, as there is in the United States, a certain amount of nervousness about approaching this. But the real progress started a couple of years ago when the Canadian courts declared that under their Bill of Rights, what they call the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, it is unconstitutional, according to the Canadian Constitution, to deny seriously ill people access to medical marijuana. And the courts basically kicked it to the government and said, you got to figure out how to do this, or we can throw out your entire marijuana law. And there have been a whole lot of crisscrossing lawsuits and decisions that's way too complicated to get into. But at present, the upshot of that is that the government has recognized that there are medical uses for marijuana, has certified several hundred patients as legitimate, what they call exemptees from the Canadian marijuana laws, and has started a program of growing and providing marijuana to those patients. There's been some criticism of whether their crop is any good or not,
yeah.
But that's another issue. Simultaneously with that, the government has put forth a proposal to quote-unquote decriminalize, that is, reduce possession of small amounts of marijuana to essentially a traffic ticket. It's not clear whether that's going to go through during the short time left in the current session of Parliament, but they're at least having the discussion, and they are inching fitfully, slowly, step by step forward towards a policy that makes a little more sense.
Right. I understand in Great Britain, we were talking about earlier, that it's now moved from a Class B to a Class C misdemeanor. There will be no arrest for possession unless you're smoking in front of a school with children there, which I think is a perfectly wonderful law.
Right. There are some other, I think, specific aggravating circumstances, but it's pretty much extreme cases when you're doing something that might, in fact, pose a danger to somebody, which is, as you say, entirely reasonable. Laws should be about protecting people from harm. And hauling somebody into jail because they smoked a joint in their living room while watching TV simply makes no sense. And, you know, what I'm struck by reading the British press is that they are at least, even almost on both sides even, they seem to be capable of having a more adult discussion of this than we've managed to do in this country. And it's very frustrating because one thing that folks like John Walters have done very effectively is try and demonize any of us who dare to raise these issues and say, you know, maybe we should rethink our current policy. And it's a tactic designed to cut off debate, and they've done it with some success.
They have indeed. Bruce, I don't know if you're aware. I have contacted everyone from the president down through John Ashcroft, you know, state, federal representatives, the governor, mayor, police chief, on down the line. Everyone in my chain of command to come on this show and defend this drug war for me. You know, let's talk about it. And of course, none of them will. You mentioned Hutchinson would at least talk. He had those debates with Governor Johnson, and yet now it's pretty much silence.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see how. I mean, Hutchinson has of course changed jobs now. He's over in Homeland Security, and we have a new DEA administrator, Karen Candy, who is a longtime drug war apparatchik, who's pretty much done nothing but put out press releases full of lies. But you know, it's got to. I mean, this is one where the change is going to come from both the bottom and the top. The president can change things. The public can force the politicians to. But the folks in the middle, the people in the drug czar's office or the head of the DEA, you know, they're career drug war bureaucrats. And they're not going to change until the president orders them to.
The
president ain't going to do that.
No. You mentioned Karen Tandy. She is the new administrator. And wasn't she the one on the day she was nominated said, well, I've never read the Institute of Medicine report. I don't read those peripheral items.
Well, you know, that was one of the things that really shocked us. And I got to say, after a couple of years of working at MPP, I don't shock easily anymore. But she was asked a number of questions by senators, asked in writing about medical marijuana, including several questions by Senator Durbin of Illinois, who's really been out front on this and deserves some congratulations. And in response to one of the questions, she said flatly that there is no evidence that marijuana has legitimate medical uses. In response to another question asking her if she was familiar with some of the key documents, including the Institute of Medicine report, and of course the famous decision by DEA Administrative Law Judge Francis Young from a decade before, in which he had advocated rescheduling marijuana to Schedule II so doctors could prescribe it, and she said, oh, she's never read any of those things. So here's a person declaring as a matter of national policy that this has no legitimate medical uses, and has never bothered to read the reports that would tell her otherwise. I mean, you know, that's sort of like saying, I don't believe that the Supreme Court has ever said anything about abortion, and no, I've never heard of this Roe v. Wade thing.
Exactly.
You know?
It is absurd, my friend. I tell you what, we got about 2 minutes left. I want to give you the opportunity to just kind of open mic whatever you might want to talk about and send folks to your website again. And I want to thank you for being on the show. Go ahead, Bruce. What would you like to say?
You know, again, I would just say to everybody, pay attention, read the newspaper, answer when things are outrageous, which they commonly are. Log on to our website, which is mpp.org. Sign up. You can get our newsletter and get email alerts absolutely free. It'll let you know what's going on in your state, in your community, and nationally as well. And every little bit that people do right now, politicians are afraid. They believe that if they are seen as quote unquote soft on drugs, they're going to get defeated. They need to know that the public is smarter than that. People are ahead of the politicians on this, and we have to drag the politicians with us, kicking and screaming. And that's my little speech.
Well, I'm with you there again, my friend. That's right on the money. Bruce, I understand you won't be in New Jersey. Folks, I'm going to New Jersey tomorrow for the Drug Policy Alliance Conference. Hopefully have some great interviews for you next week. Bruce, I want you to come back soon. We just didn't get as far along as I wanted to, and there's just so much about marijuana and medical marijuana that is the hub of this drug war, and we need to fix that in a hurry.
Sure, I'm glad to come back any time you want to have me.
Okay, well, thank you, Bruce Merkin of Marijuana Policy Project.
Thank you.
Thank you. Steve, run that track 10 for us. Okay, for today's drug war hero of the week, I do want to name Curtis, last name to be not mentioned, that high school student who called me about that situation with his friend Robert. You know, he stood up. He's looking for a solution. I'm not an attorney. I don't know what I can do to help him. But I want to say thank you to him and to all those who call me.
And as always, I remind you that because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, so please, be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.